Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And each month on the show, she's here. It's always on Tuesday. And we talk about lawn and garden care. And folks have the opportunity here to call in and ask questions. Maybe you have a problem and you're not quite sure how to deal with it. So you give us the best description of the plant and the problem, and she'll see if she can help you out. Maybe you're also still thinking about what you might like to plant. We may be kind of at a lull here in terms of planting stuff, but there are still things that you can plant. And once we move into the sort of the late summer and the early fall, there's still the opportunity for planting things. And there, besides, there's a lot of stuff to be done out there. There's maintenance. There's all kinds of stuff. So whatever kind of questions you might have, you can give us a call. And I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
She was just great. Here, and you should have heard her.
I was on a tirade.
She was on a tirade. She was talking about how in her yard this year, she's just been assaulted by Japanese beetles. And they're definitely out there. And depending upon what, of course, the problem with Japanese beetles is that they're not real selective. They'll eat a lot of different, they won't eat everything, but they will eat a lot of different things.
Right.
There are particular things they really like, and they will really chow on those. But then there are a lot of other stuff that they will eat, too. So it can be, if you're unlucky enough to have a whole bunch of them descend on your yard, you could have a lot of damage to the plants. So she was just
now I'm being quiet.
Now she won't.
I vented and I feel much better. Thank you.
She got it out of her system, so she feels much better. Well, we're glad to have you here. We have a bunch of people here with questions, so we'll just get right to it and start with someone in Champaign on our line one. Hello. Call there, line one.
Are you there?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. All right, couple of questions. We have some daylilies out in the back patio, around the patio, and they've done really well. This is the third year they've been in, so they're just, like, all over the place. But the blooms have been just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But now we're worried. We've seen some where they look almost weedy. They grow so tall, and they just stick out terribly, and this is at other places. But I'm afraid we might get to that point if we don't do something. So what's the best thing we do with daylilies?
So they're spreading out? Is that what you're saying? So they're getting kind of...
They're bushing. Yeah, we noticed there's some suckers coming up. I don't know if you call them suckers when they're daylilies, but they're little offspring over towards the sides. So we know we can get rid of those, but... is there something to do to kind of thin them out a little so they're not so bushy? But then also my concern is I see some around the area that they just look like they're just super tall, like just the stems come out like 6 feet or something, just ridiculously high away from the greenery itself. And we don't want them that tall. We want them lower to the ground around the greenery.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the flower stalks are real tall?
Right, the flower stalks.
Okay. And it's not just that particular variety?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know because I just see them around, and I don't know what kind of they have, and I don't really know what kind we have. But we have noticed they've gotten taller over the years that we've had them. So each year they've gotten a little taller and still not as bad as some others look like, but these have gotten pretty tall. Mm-hmm. And what we do, last year we saw like some pods come off of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I guess a couple things with daylily. There's many, many, many different varieties.
Okay.
And some of them are actually quite small, and some of them can get easily, the flower stalks could get 5-6 feet tall.
Wow.
I mean, they really do that. So part of it, I don't know what cultivar you have, and then certainly, as they're there for a couple of years and get more and more established, then they tend to start taking on that mature habit that they were always meant to have. So sometimes in the first few years, they're not very tall, but depending on that cultivar, then the third or fourth year as they get established, then they do get taller. So you may just decide that really isn't a cultivar that I like or a variety that I like. I really want something shorter. So I think that would be one thing, assuming you're not fertilizing or anything that really gets them going.
We just water them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which is, and that's fine. So I think I think about what varieties you have, and you may decide you want to select a smaller one.
We do like the flowers. They look great. Mm-hmm. I was just afraid that over the years they might. So they really haven't gotten really tall And I didn't know if that was just something the daylilies do over the years or if it is a certain variety that does that.
I would imagine it's the variety.
Okay,
to be honest with you.
Have too much of a worry on that respect. But we have noticed they've gotten thicker.
Oh, and they will absolutely do that because every year they'll put on more and more of these crowns. Okay. And you can certainly, you know, as far as thinning them out, a lot of times people just like to divide them, and you can certainly divide them, give them to your friends or, you know, move into another part of the yard, and that's just fine. Normally we'd probably do that in spring or fall, but with daylilies, they're really pretty tough, and so you can do it a wide variety of times, and I've certainly have done it, you know, in the summer. I wouldn't probably recommend that unless you make sure you water them after you transplant them, but you can certainly, and it's very easy, you can just, you know, dig up, and you don't have to dig up the whole clump. You can just take a little part of it and, you know, move that around, and that's fine. I wouldn't hesitate doing that kind of thing. I think that's just fine.
So the daylily, so are they bulbs? Basically, or?
Well, they're not really a true bulb in the sense of bulbs, but they have kind of these tuberous kind of roots is really what they are.
Okay,
so they have these kind of thick.
You can just go down to the base of the plant, mm-hmm. and then just kind of chop off a section
uh-huh,
of it.
Sure. They have crowns. As you go into there more and more, you'll see that they have separate crowns. And then you can sort of decide from there how many of those crowns you want to divide apart.
Okay.
And so they're very easy to divide, and it's a great plant all the way around because they're pretty tough. And
yeah, they've done so. Very, very well. So mm-hmm. And then the other, how about Easter lilies, you know, those kinds? We've planted a couple, you know, from leftover. Mm-hmm. Are those managed in any way differently or... Because they're starting to get pretty tall, and I mean...
Well, again, there's many, many varieties of lilies. So, again, real short ones, these little pixies, up to ones that can easily get 7 feet tall, 8 feet tall even. They get very large. So you really have to look at what varieties you have and make sure those are really the ones that you want.
Right.
They're not quite... They certainly produce new bulbs. They are a true bulb, and so they'll produce more bulbs. And so most of the time, you really don't have to do a whole lot for them. They're not nearly as durable as daylilies, so generally you have to... It's good to, you know, water them during drought periods and all those kinds of things. I wouldn't move them till probably, you know, September or so. I would not move those in the summertime.
Okay.
So a few of those things. But, again, it's sort of looking at the variety and looking at the mature size and to see if that's the ones that you really like.
Okay, great. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with those.
Good luck.
And then the only other thing was about the pear trees this year. We have one, Bradford pear, and we noticed a lot of them in the area didn't flower.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something going on that...
You know, I'm not sure. I haven't heard of anything general about pears not flowering. I don't particularly remember any, like, really late frosts or anything that might have killed off the flowers. I really don't know that. I think as long as they still look fairly healthy, I'm not sure I'd worry about too much.
Nice green, glossy leaves.
Right.
That was it. There was nothing else.
Huh. And so I haven't heard anything in particular on why they wouldn't have flowered. Usually with those kinds of things, you know, late frosts or something that kills off the flower buds. But
okay, because they were buds. But nothing happened. So that's why...
So they got killed off somehow, either through disease
or
weather.
We're too concerned because it wasn't just archery. We noticed a lot in the air.
Probably a weather thing, I'd imagine.
Okay. All right. Well, great. Thanks so much.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much. Our guest this morning, that's part of Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here every month on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think it's good. I don't like to be a nag here, but I think that...
Go right ahead.
I think that, well, the thing is, you, over time, you plant things around your home landscape, and you sort of lose track of what you've done and where.
Right.
And I think it's a good idea. The plants come with little tags.
I know.
Want to take those and say, put them in an envelope, put them in a drawer someplace, you know, put them somewhere so that you know that you can get at them so that if later you want to think, now, what was it that we planted back there 2-3 years ago? You can't remember what variety it was. Mm-hmm. You know, try and keep that stuff together so then at least you'll know what it is that you got.
And actually, one of our master gardeners had a great idea. And what she does is she actually takes one of those photo albums and then that has the plastic sleeves in them. And then for each part of her garden, she has these different sleeves that go along with it, and then she just tucks those labels in there. So she at least has the sleeves along with what part of the garden they go with, and so if she has to, then she can go back. And so it's a real quick thing to do, just shove them in there, and then at least you have them, and they're at least semi-organized.
Oh, very nice. Then you can go and take a picture of the plant and put that in there. So
man, you're really organized.
No, I'm not.
Bring that in next time. I want to see your photo album.
Oh, no, you don't. let's go to line number 2 in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi. I had a question about watering in general. We're considering a sprinkler system, and they have proposed to put it up just for the lawn with some of it hitting the beds. We do have a lot of flower beds along the perimeter of the yard, and I want to know if it would be a good idea to supplement with a soaker hose system or to actually have a two-zone system so that the lawn and the beds can get watered with the sprinkler system. And I'll just hang up and listen to the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess a lot of it depends on maybe what flowers you have or what shrubs and that kind of thing. You know, most of the time, like with lawns, we generally recommend about an inch of water a week. Usually flower beds, we'd recommend an inch of water a week. The only problem is, of course, depending on how the sprinklers are set up, and I'm sure they're going to do a good job at it, but generally you still sort of end up with those kind of areas where a little wetter, a little drier, and so you either decide that just through the sprinkler system and kind of work with that, so those plants that need to be wetter are kind of in those spots, or you may just decide you really want more control with flower gardens and you want to do it separately. I guess the one thing that I would think about, especially with lawns, is obviously you're putting in a sprinkler. Maybe you don't want your lawn to naturally go dormant, but bluegrass lawns and cool season lawns naturally go dormant in July and August, and people don't water them, and that may be a decision that somewhere along the line you decide you want to save water and you don't want to water those areas all the time, and that would mean, of course, that your flower bed wouldn't get any water either. So I think ideally I would probably put it in two different zones. I'd have my flower bed in sort of one zone and then my lawn in the other, and it gives you a lot more flexibility down the road.
Okay. Well, let's go to Piatt County for the next caller. This is line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning. My first question concerns the lamb's ears that I transplanted, and they just went berserk and formed. I have three large sections of Japanese beetle. That's
right. We all have that on our brain,
yeah, we have
don't we?
Yes. Three large sections, and then they flowered so beautifully, you know, those huge tall flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally cut those off because they didn't look as good as
mm-hmm.
or initially did. And now there's this huge mat of leaves, and mm-hmm. some just look so dreadful,
mm-hmm.
you know, mottled and yellow, and mm-hmm. some look good. And so should you just de-leaf these, or is it time to... I mean, is it just because of the humidity? They don't look very good.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you leave the big mat there or hide them or...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. Actually, I was looking at mine on Sunday and did some trimming on mine. And I think in some respect, you're absolutely right. I think the humidity, lamb's ears has those really kind of big furry leaves like lamb. And so they do have a tendency to sort of mat, and depending on how much dew we get and all that, they do that. Plus, the fact, I think, once they flower, mm-hmm. they seem to kind of get leggy, and they just don't look as good. And I think you'll often see that with lamb's ears. So my suggestion would be to kind of get in there. I would go ahead and just physically with your hand sort of remove some of those leaves, but I would cut them back. And you may decide, besides just cutting off the flower stalk, you may actually want to go down further, because I think you may find that some of that has actually kind of died back a little bit.
Yeah.
And so clean them up that way, and then you'll find, especially we're getting a little rain here, and then as the temperatures get a little different, you'll find that they'll sort of re-leaf and look much better. So don't hesitate to go back in there and really do some pruning to make them look better.
Okay, thank you. Well, then my mm-hmm. second question was about daylilies also, is that I have some that are also large, and I'm glad, but the leaves have turned brown
mm-hmm.
in spite of watering. And was that just because of this year? I mean, then should I trim those off? I mean, it's not the whole leaf, it's the tips of the leaf.
Right, right.
Is that just from the heat that we've had?
I mean, it could very well be, but if you've been watering, probably not. They do get some leaf disease problems, and then depending on what varieties and stuff, some of them are a little bit more susceptible than others. You certainly can cut those off, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of go from there, and they'll look much better. Something that I do, and I know daylily growers are probably not necessarily agreeing with me on this, but it's something I do. Actually, after they flower, I just chop the thing back, the whole thing back to about 6 inches.
Yeah,
I cut all the leaves off.
They look better, yeah.
And they look so much better, but I do make sure I water them, and then they'll send out these new leaves, and they'll look so much better. And I even do that with the rebloomers after they've done that first flush of heavy flowering. Then I cut them back, and they look so much better. You get rid of all that dead, you know, yellow leaves and
yeah,
all that
well,
stuff.
This is the first year I ever saw any of the leaves get so brown.
Yeah.
I mean, usually they're just so tough, and so I just was wondering, I was like, oh, did something happen to all my daylilies? Or
yeah, if I mean, you certainly, beyond just what I've said, you know, if you want to take it to your local extension office and have somebody take a look at it, they'd have a better idea of maybe if it's a fungal disease, or you can actually take a sample to the U of I plant clinic or send a sample to them. So you may want to find out, especially if this happens year after year after year, I definitely would find out what's going on.
Okay, and then my last question is about Japanese beetles, because I've been attacking them also, and finally for the first time I did use 7 on one of our new crab trees, but in the article that the extension sent me that you wrote, you mentioned that a couple of other, like neem and some of those, how do they affect the wild, I mean like butterflies and things?
They're actually safer than 7.
Okay.
Neem has actually been used quite a bit as a, it's a kind of a repellent, and it seems to work better from what I've seen and what I've heard is that it actually works better if you do it early, as in when you first start to see them. So it may be a little late to get really good control with that, but it certainly would be something to try. And then another product that I've been using is called Piola, and I think that's something you're going to have to order probably online, but it's a pyrethrin and canola oil mix. And I've actually had really good luck with it, and even had good luck this year having as many as I had. And it's much safer for beneficials, honeybees and butterflies and such.
Okay. So, and milky spore, one catalog just raved about it, but it takes, like, it's a 3 years really to...
And the problem is with milky spore, you know, it is safe. I mean, that's the good part. We like that. It's very specific to Japanese beetle grubs, but it attacks the grubs, you know, the young larvae. And the problem is with Japanese beetles, they fly long distances, and they may fly as much as 13 miles from the place that they were a grub to where they finally end up as adults. So, you know, just because you control the grubs in your yard doesn't mean you're not going to have Japanese beetle adults. I guess that's the bottom line. So, you know,
not much comfort, but thanks.
No, it's not. Unfortunately, it works, but yet it's very limited.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Sure.
Right.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call. Okay. And anybody who even entertained the notion of a trap, you would say to them, don't do that.
Yeah, I guess the one thing, and it is, I just written an article about this too, is that the traps are great attractants. No doubt about it. They attract Japanese beetles. You bet they attract them. They're just not very good at trapping. They trap so many of them, but then there's a whole bunch of them that they attract but never kill or never get trapped. Mm-hmm. And so University of Kentucky actually did a study, and they found that those plants that were in the flight path from the Japanese beetle to the trap actually received more damage than if there was no trap there at all. So, you know, that tells us those plants that are around the trap and those plants that are in the flight path to the trap are going to sustain actually more damage, and that's what their study showed. So if you want to use traps, I wouldn't recommend spending the money on it, but if you want to use traps, I'd put them way off in the distance. Of course, the joke is always that you put them in your neighbor's yard, but don't put them next to any plant that you want to keep. I guess that's the bottom line if you feel like you want to use them.
Are they even useful on an industrial scale if you put out enough of them?
Well, the problem
I sort
is they
of
get
feel
full.
Like, what's the point? Even if you could put out 10 or 20, you still would have the same problem. You'd end up attracting more than you would trap.
Yep, and that's the problem. And then if you trap them and then you don't keep emptying that bag, then you're absolutely attracting more than you're ever going to catch because the bag's full, and you know, so you have to constantly, you know, get rid of that bag. But then I think the traps just make us feel better. As Phil Nixon said, it's kind of a pound of flesh. You know, you're exacting that pound of flesh. You can see it. It's visible that you've killed off these Japanese beetles. There's so many. But you don't see the 10,000 that you attracted to your yard.
At Phil. No, no. He's an entomologist and Shakespearean scholar.
That's right.
Both.
But I like that. A pound
he's a
of
two-threat
flesh.
Guy. All right. Bourbon hay. Let's go to line number 3 right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
My first question was inspired by the first caller. What are those pods that appear on, like, lilies and bluebells and so forth? Are they something that we should cultivate or take care of?
Well, it's a seed pod, and sometimes they don't always form seed pods on some of them, but normally we wouldn't. We'd probably go ahead, or we would go ahead and recommend just taking those off, because if you're not interested in seeds, then why let the plant, you know, expend energy on producing the seeds that we don't want anyway? Plus, for a lot of plants, not necessarily ones you mentioned, but for a lot of them, once they start to produce seeds, then they quit flowering. So that would be another reason to take them off. Now, some people like to breed lilies. I mean, they actually like to collect those seeds and plant them out. Now, it'll probably be 4 or 5 years, maybe 7 years before you ever have a plant that flowers. But, you know, that's sometimes that's what people like to do. So
that's like a second method of propagation.
Sure. But it's certainly more variable. Because you've got this, it's a seed, and because you've got these crosses, and depending on what the parents were, that whatever flower comes out of that more than likely is not going to look like its parent.
Huh.
It's going to be different somehow, and some people like that. They like to see what comes out of it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun. But if you truly want a lily that's 5 feet tall and it's pink with a white throat, that's probably not what you're going to go for. You want that same plant, so you'd go with the bulb. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
My next question is when is the best time to divide hostas? Can you do it any time during the season?
Yeah, you know, this is another one of those things that I normally would have recommended in the spring. That's what I've always done is, you know, April and May,
you know,
when they're first coming up and you can see where the crowns are and they're fairly easy to divide. I was talking to some hosta growers and they said they prefer to do it this time of year,
in
the hotter part of the season. I think the idea is that then because they have such a very fleshy root or crown that, and you can't help but cut through that there may be some concerns about it rotting. And so some folks choose to do it then. I guess it kind of depends on you on how you want to do it. But that's normally I would recommend in the springtime just because it's easier and then the leaves come out and they still look good. When I do it later on in the season, you know, and you divide them, then the leaves look all kind of, you know, floppy and they don't look all good, that good. And I'm just not patient.
If you wanted to do them yet this
season, look good.
You got no choice.
Pardon?
If you wanted to do it yet this season, you've got no choice but to do it after springtime.
Right. And so, but I guess I would still probably wait. Personally, I would still probably wait till we get through the really hot stuff. So probably, you know, end of August into September or something.
Oh, okay.
You don't want to do it too late, so they still have time to get established. But,
right.
But I would do, because that would be my second option on most perennials is to do it then September or so.
Okay. Can you do the same kind of thing with iris? Can you pull them up and divide? I guess it's a rhizome, or
And actually, this is the time to do irises. It's one of the few perennials that we really do recommend that you do it in July and August when it's hot and dry. So those big bearded irises, this is absolutely the time to do that. So go ahead and you dig them up, and realizing that old rhizome, the one that flowered this year, only flowers once, and so those old ones are the ones you're going to get rid of, and then you're going to keep the smaller ones.
Oh, well, I'm glad you said that.
Mm-hmm.
The old rhizome is the one that's attached to the leaves?
The one that's attached to the flower stalk. Usually you can tell where the old flower stalk was.
Yeah.
And that particular rhizome only flowers once.
Ah.
And so what you're wanting to do is then look at those young ones that still have leaves on them, but they're smaller generally, and they sort of come off of the large rhizome that just flowered.
Okay.
I'm using my hands so you can actually see what I'm trying to do. But once you get in there, you can kind of see which ones are the younger ones. And so even on the rebloomers, you're still going to be doing that kind of thing where you're actually trying to encourage those new ones. And those are the ones you're going to replant, and the other ones you can just stick in the compost pile.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the
bye.
Call. We're at our midpoint here. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Every month on a Tuesday she's here, we talk about lawn and garden care. So if you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, ornamentals, stuff you can eat, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And next we'll talk with someone in Mattoon, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple of questions for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
One, on the front of our house, which is an east side location, because of trees growing and such over time, it's almost completely in the shade.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff that I'd planted there in the past never grew. So this year I moved some hosta and some coral bells into that area, hoping that shade-loving plants would thrive there, and so far they're doing just fine and dandy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I thought would be kind of nice is that each end of this bed would be to have some kind of plant that would be a little bigger in stature and kind of be like an exclamation point on each end of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to try and stay in that kind of purpley foliage type of line like the coral bells are, because it helps tie into to other colors throughout. And I was wondering if there's anything that you could suggest that would grow in the shade, stay manageable, but give me a little verticality there.
And so you want this to be a shrub, or you want it to be just an herbaceous perennial, or do you care?
I want it to be a perennial. And, you know, a shrub would be fine as long as it's one that, you know, I could keep trimmed down and keep managed. I'm mainly interested in the color and something that would be a little vertical. I don't want something that's going to spread out horizontally because
mm-hmm,
I don't have the space for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to like the shade.
Right, right, right. There's actually some great plants, and I'm trying to think of what the common name is. I think the common name might be snake root, but Simisifuga.
Okay.
I'm sorry, because I think it's snake
black
root.
Black snake root?
Black snake root.
Yes.
But there's some wonderful ones now that have kind of an ebony, kind of blackish look to the foliage, and the foliage is very dissected, so it's kind of this, you know, wonderful kind of semi-lacy kind of look to it. And I think from what the plants that you have now, I think it'd be a nice contrast.
Okay.
To get a little bit of different texture in there. And there's some great kind of these darker kind of burgundy-looking ones, as well as, you know, more green ones. But they have a very spiky white flower.
Oh, that would be great.
And they get very tall. Mm-hmm. The flower stalk gets very tall, and mm-hmm. it's definitely very vertical.
Okay, great.
So I think you'd really like, and they like the, they certainly like the shade, and I think that might be a really nice one. I'm trying to think if there's some other things.
Okay.
That's one that came to mind.
Certainly there are shrubs that will grow in the shade, but I don't know if that's what you that's what you want.
Tend to get round and bulbous, and I don't want the horizontal growth if I can avoid. I mean, I've got a barberry that's just beautiful, but
mm-hmm.
one, it likes the sun, and two, it just, you know, goes nuts.
Yeah, and they tend to be a little bit more, as you said, they tend to be a little bit rounder,
mm-hmm.
which is all the things that I can think of, like hydrangeas and stuff like that. They're just
right.
much more round than that.
Yeah, that's what makes it tough. I bought, based on your recommendation, a well-tended perennial garden a couple of years ago.
Oh, good. Do you like that book?
Well, I do, except she uses all the scientific names for plants, and if you don't know them, it's sometimes hard to tell what's going on.
Yeah,
and
so you kind of have to go to the back. She does have an index, I think, that tells you that, but you're right. You kind of have to keep flipping back and forth. There is a newer version of that, and I haven't looked at that, so I don't know if she's kind of changed that format, but yeah, you're right. It makes it a little bit harder to know what's going on. And I can't think of anything else. I'm sure there's other things out there that I just can't think of, but that certainly would be one plant, though.
Well, our local paper had a thing on you know, I guess blackish foliage is the end thing now.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But all the perennials they listed aren't hardy in our zone.
Oh,
there is everything, the closest it came was zone 6. And I thought, well, you know, that doesn't sound good. We have one bad winter and, you know, it's gone. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is we went to get we planted a pussy willow a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it is doing, you know, just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a big, upright, shrubby kind of tree.
Right.
And what we saw and what I've seen in a couple places is a kind of pussy willow that almost grows like a weeping willow, where the limbs come out
right.
and actually droop down. And
right.
I'm wondering what that is, because that's what I'd like to get.
Actually, it is. It's another pussy willow, but it's just a specialized one. I'm trying to think of the name of it. But it's a weeping pussy willow.
Oh, okay.
So you have
weeping.
You buy it. Yeah, you buy it that way.
Okay.
I will tell you, I'm just sort of warning you, that Japanese beetles love them. So just sort of letting you know.
You don't need to tell me.
Just sort of letting you know
they
love pussy willows.
We live in a rural subdivision, and I was fighting Japanese beetles for 3 or 4 years before they ever hit Champaign-Urbana.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah. But the good news is, and I was just looking the other day, we've had very, very few for the last 2 years.
Yeah. I'm hoping that that's true, and I've talked to many people like you that have said that. The first couple of years, it was really thick, really bad, and then now it's kind of tapered off, and they just hit few. So that's what I'm hoping that the rest of us will eventually find.
I have another tree in our front yard that I thought it looks like a poplar tree,
mm-hmm.
but the leaves are more elongated, heart-shaped, and they're real sharp sawtooth, and somebody told me it was a kind of elm. and I really don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It was a gift, but they love it too. And I used to have to get up on my roof and spray.
Oh heavens!
And to reach the top of the tree. Mm-hmm. And when I was up there, the first year that they were really bad, and we had a trap. And let me tell you, I was on my roof and could see those things swarming in from 360 degrees around. And I told him, I said, this trap is going. This is insane. Plus, you know, you talk about the bags getting full, but then the thing is, what do you do with them?
Then what do you, I know.
The traps don't kill them, and
that's right.
I learned they don't burn.
They don't burn?
Oof.
And the garbage men weren't real happy.
I bet they didn't like them either. Well, soapy water will do it, or alcohol. I mean, you know,
but
alcohol.
If things go on, maybe you're right. just patience.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes. That makes me feel better. Good luck with your garden.
Thanks
for the call. And of course, it is true that if you have some plant that's really important to you and they like, you can spray it. If it means that much to you, you can do that. Of course, I suppose the downside is the most effective if you do use 7. The problem is, yeah, it'll kill Japanese beetles, but it may kill some other things that you would rather not kill. So that too.
Right. So we really encourage people to make some decisions, because most of the time it's not, I know it's, believe me, I know that it's devastating to look at these trees, but most of the time on healthy trees, whatever, they will relief. And I even noticed that my little leaf linden actually is starting to leaf out again a little bit. So that's encouraging.
Yeah,
so hopefully it's not going to be life threatening for plants, but it's certainly, you know, devastating for us.
It's not pretty to look at.
No, it's not pretty.
Not pretty. A cell phone caller next to your line number 2. Hello.
Oh. Give me a break.
Yeah? What? Oh.
Okay.
Are you still there, caller?
Maybe not.
I don't know what that was about. Maybe they got impatient and we made them wait too long. I don't know. We'll go to line 4, and this is someone in Aurora. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
I have a Monarda, and it's red. And it has pink flowers now, and both the pink and the red have a shoot, a stem going up the center, and then another flower on top. What is that called, and does that always happen? I can't recall that it has happened before.
So it has two flowers, kind of one on top of the other?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes.
I'm not sure I've never seen that in Monardas.
I never
in
have
the bee bombs.
I think I've seen a Monarda do that.
Have you seen
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think.
Is it just just a few of them? Just a few of the flowers doing that?
Yeah, I think it is. Just a few out of the bunch do that.
You know, I didn't look at that. I just thought, well, I wonder what's going on. That's all I thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was only one color put in, and I'm sure it was red. This is my fourth year of attracting butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the reasons, but I have not gotten butterflies. I've gotten bees, but not butterflies.
Eventually.
So then what is that called when a plant does that?
You know, I don't know. It could be, you know, sometimes through insect feeding. You know, I've certainly seen it on, actually, I was thinking more like purple coneflowers and stuff. Sometimes you'll see them do this kind of weird thing, and it actually is probably a little mite, I think is what we finally decided, is a little mite actually does a little feeding on, and when the flower bud is actually very, very small, it actually sort of changes the growth a little bit. And I don't know if that's what's going on with bee balm or not. So it could be something that somewhere along the line, something else is going on with that particular flower, either through insect feeding or some sort of hormonal changes somewhere along the line, and it's produced So I'm not sure exactly what's going on necessarily with bee balm, but as I said, I've certainly seen that with purple coneflowers that do that.
I'm going to be moving, and I didn't look for it, but there will be a half an acre of land. What would you suggest for something to plant? I was thinking of prairie grasses.
Mm-hmm. For an half an acre, you're going to make some changes? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I thought I don't want to mow.
Sure. Well, there's certainly, you know, I would check in your area, and there's certainly plenty of organizations that can kind of help you out, make some plant selections. But certainly there's lots of great prairie plants, even the purple coneflower that I mentioned, this gray-headed coneflower. There's lots of great plants where you could easily establish kind of a prairie area. So, you know, it takes a little bit of planning, certainly, but it certainly can be done, and it sounds like it'd be beautiful. And you want butterflies. I guarantee you get butterflies, you start doing that.
Well, I kind of gave up on butterflies.
Build it and they will come. It will happen.
Yes,
it will happen.
I've heard
that. They'll see it. They'll see it.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye. All right, let's go to Hoopston. Somebody here on cell phone, line 3. Hello.
Yeah, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of quick questions with regard.
Uh-oh.
Are you there, caller? Oh, no, we lost him. Okay, well, maybe he can call us back and we can get a better connection. Meantime, let's go over to Vermilion County, line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I would like some suggestions for perennials that are low maintenance, so I would always have some cutting flowers. I've got peonies and tulips and daffodils and columbine and daisies for the early spring, but then I don't have anything from here on out, and it's sort of nice to just be able to go outside and cut something to put on the table, and I don't know what to get. Could you suggest some, or a book, or maybe some other people could?
Mm-hmm. Now, so this is sun, I take it, full sun, or?
Pardon?
Is this a sunny area?
Well, I have a choice.
So, okay. You probably find more if you've got a sunny area. You're going to get more flowers or things that are more available.
Don't like to spend a lot of time out in the heat and the bugs, and so it would be nice to have something going.
Right, right. And actually, I think one that makes a really nice cut flower is a salvia, the perennial salvias. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but they last a long time in arrangements, and they have this wonderful, blue to purple spiky flower. It's very pretty. There's actually one that I've just fallen in love with over the past couple of years called Caradonna, and it's a salvia, perennial salvia, and they're pretty tough plants, and that one just seems to bloom and bloom and bloom, and it's got these kind of purplish blue flowers with red stems, so it's very ornamental, and they seem to be very long spikes, so it'd be nice, I think, really nice when arrangements that way. Did you say you have some black-eyed Susans and some of those?
I have the white daisies with the yellow centers.
Right. I'd really think of some black-eyed Susans, some of the Rebecca's, some wonderful ones. There's a great one that this perennial, and then most of the time, but a lot of times it reseeds itself, so it acts like a perennial, called Indian Summer, and just a beautiful one. A very large flower, great cut flower, and just really a knockout plant. So I would check on all the Rebecca's, those black-eyed Susans. There's a bunch of ones out there. There's one called Irish Eyes. It's got a green center, and those are just great, and they bloom and bloom and bloom all summer long, so that's nice. Certainly asters, tough plant, bloom later on in the season, or actually you can get them so they're blooming even August, September into the later part of the season. Those would be good ones. There's another plant, horrible name, but that's called a sneezeweed. I don't know why they terrible, terrible name. It's Hellenium, but it's great. Another kind of daisy flower, but you get more autumn colors with it, kind of golds and
sneezeweed.
Sneezeweed, as in hachu, sneezeweed. Terrible name, but it's Hellenium.
Okay.
And great, another great plant for kind of that later season. But as I said, you get more of the autumn colors in it.
Okay.
More golds and some of those. There's certainly perennial sunflowers that are actually smaller flowers than what you might traditionally think of. So there's a bunch of them out there that I think would be
great. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Very good.
Good luck.
And let's see. We'll talk with someone in Gaze. And this is line number 2. Hello.
Hello. Okay, I planted a Virginia spiderwort.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very pretty plant with and it's Concord grape. It's got bluish purple blooms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so first year I planted it, came up beautifully. Then about this time, none of the blooms were opening, and I read that little thing that they put in with the plants, and it said, cut back foliage in midsummer to promote new growth and new blooms. Not knowing what foliage really meant, I hacked the whole thing down.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it didn't grow until the next spring. Okay.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, so now this year, I still don't really know what foliage means. I just took off all the little flower bulbs, and now the leaves are dying, and I don't know what does foliage mean?
Well,
how far do I hack it?
Yeah, yeah. is this in full sun or is this shade or?
It's afternoon sun.
Okay. Because they don't flower really well in the shade, even though sometimes they're listed as shade plants. They don't flower very well. And you said it did flower this year?
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Okay. What I do with those, and so I'm a little surprised it didn't come back well for you, but what I do, I just literally cut them back, as in down to probably 6 inches or so, 4 to 6 inches. I really hack them down because they get really ugly looking.
Yeah.
They get very ugly and unsightly. And then, but I do make sure that I water them.
Right.
And then they'll send up this new foliage. And I don't get a whole lot more flowers, but the foliage looks so much better.
Okay, so about 6 inches. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
All right, very Bye-bye. Good. Well, lines are clear, and we have about 10, 12 minutes left in the program. If you want to give us a call, talk with Sandy. Sandy Mason is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here once a month to talk about lawn and garden care. If you got a problem, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Are there some things going on that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, actually, we have something that's really exciting here in East Central Illinois, and it's called the Master Naturalist Program. And I know people have heard me talk about Master Gardeners all the time, and they may be familiar in their own areas with Master Gardeners, but there's actually a program that's sort of modeled off of Master Gardeners, but the emphasis is more on, you know, natural areas. So people do the same kinds of things where they have classroom training, they go through the training, and then they go out and help within their community. Say park districts or forest preserves or whatever, to sort of help professionals maybe with managing the natural areas or maybe serving as interpreters or tour guides or whatever, doing different displays on natural areas, just trying to educate people more on those natural areas that are out there. You know, we've talked about prairies and all kinds of things. So we're starting that this year, and actually training starts in September. So we're going to do some fall training, and this is for the kind of the East Central Illinois area, so you don't necessarily have to be in Champaign County. So if people are interested in getting more involved in the Master Naturalist Program, they can give me a call or give the U of I Extension a call at 217-333-7672. And this is actually a program that we're working with not only U of I Extension, but also the Champaign County Forest Preserve District and Urbana Park District are also involved in this program, as well as a whole bunch of other people, Grand Prairie Friends, and a lot of great groups here in this area. So Master Naturalist, I think it's something, it's kind of throughout the United States and in different areas, but brand new pretty much to Illinois. So real excited about being able to offer that. So hopefully people will get involved.
Okay, very good. Well, I mentioned we had time for calls, and we got a bunch. We'll see if we can get them all. We'll start with someone here on a cell phone. This is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I started a new garden last year, and the first year my tomatoes came up, they had the bottom rot where the tomatoes themselves rotted on the bottom. And then I'm having the same problem this year. So what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called blossom end rot. And I guess a couple things that they've found, sometimes it's just plain old weather is a lot of it. When we have really hot, humid days, then blossom end rot tends to be worse. So I will kind of tell you that. Also, in some cultivars, there's varieties, it tends to be worse than in others, but sometimes the weather just doesn't cooperate at all. But then once the weather sort of subsides and we get a little bit, you know, cooler weather, then usually those tomatoes that come on are much better. But there's a couple things you can do. We know that if the plants go wet to dry, in other words, they fluctuate between wet and dry a lot, it tends to be worse. So if you can keep a constant moisture supply, so, you know, mulching helps, you know, if you can mulch them, and then when you water on a regular basis, don't let them get too dry, that kind of thing will help. Caged tomatoes don't seem to have nearly as many problems as staked tomatoes, as in if you're doing a lot of pruning on the tomatoes, then it seems to make it worse. So there's a few things like that, but unfortunately, it's the weather, and unfortunately there isn't a whole lot we can do about that just yet.
Okay, well, it's not lacking in any nutrition or anything.
Well, actually, it's a calcium deficiency, but it's not that the calcium isn't in the soil. The problem is that because it's real humid, the plant isn't taking up enough moisture and therefore enough calcium in order to get it to the tomato. So the weather is making a problem. So sometimes you'll hear people say, well, spray calcium nitrate. And that may help, but it has to be done when the plants are actually, when the tomatoes are about grape size or smaller. So it has to be when they're tiny, or okay. when the tomatoes are quite small. And it has to, obviously, you get it on there before the tomatoes start showing the problem. But most of the time, these other things will help. But if you truly want to try something, that would be something that could be done.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. To Champagne, next line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm interested in the plant called lamb's ear.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a perennial plant?
It sure is.
And I understand it comes in two heights. Is that correct?
That it comes in two heights? Lamb's ear comes in two heights. There's certainly some cultivars or different varieties. To me, they're all kind of the same height. There is one that is called Big Ears or Helen von Stein, and it's got very large sort of lamb's ears. So that's a little different than the one that this more traditional that people find pretty much anywhere. That's just a straight species. It was called straight species. So there are some cultivars, but they still kind of, even when they flower, they still are about the same height. The Big Ears doesn't seem to flower quite as readily than the other ones, but
really, we want it for the foliage.
Yeah, right. We really want it for the foliage. That's why a lot of times people like this one called Big Ears, or also called Helen von Stein. So, and a lot of people like that because it does tend to stay more compact. The leaves are bigger, doesn't flower quite as readily. And I think probably it really is probably a superior plant.
Is there any particular cultivation required for them?
They like sun, but they're pretty durable plants. Probably the thing they don't like is really wet soils. So I wouldn't put them in a low area or any area where it's going to stay wet for a long period of time, especially in the wintertime. But other than that, they're really pretty tough.
All right.
Pretty tough.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. And let's go to line number three. This is also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes.
Okay. I have two questions about hydrangeas, rebloomers.
Mm-hmm.
I have one that's bloomed its head off, and I don't know when to prune it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's gotten huge.
Is it pink or blue or white?
It's
or
blue. Very mm-hmm. blue, and it's bloomed last year all summer long, and now it's blooming like crazy. And I pick some of the blossoms off as they fade and put them in the house to dry, and they mm-hmm. dry real well, and they sort of stay light blue, too.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
I don't know when to actually prune the plant.
Right, right. I guess, is this one that's supposed to be like endless summer or some of those that are supposed to be?
Yeah, this one happens to be endless summer. I have endless summer and all summer long and another one called forever something or other.
Yeah.
I have all three of them, and all of them are, all but one, and I'll tell you about that one in a minute, are doing beautifully. But this one's gotten, it's really getting a little big for where I have it.
Right, right. The nice thing about those, like in the summer, and the older types, I guess I'll call them older types, of the blue ones, bloomed only on old wood, in, you know, the wood that, from the year before. And so you had to be much more careful about when you prune them, because if you prune them early in the spring, then you've lost your, you know, your flowers mm-hmm. for that year. And so normally we would prune those right after they flower.
Right, but these
newer ones.
Flower again. So
right, right. So what do you do? So these are much easier. So you could easily prune them in the springtime, and to get them smaller and still get flowers off of them.
But they'll get the second blooming, not the first.
Pardon?
They'll bloom on the second blooming, not the first, or they bloom on both anyway.
They bloom, the newer varieties now bloom on new wood and old wood both.
Yeah.
So you may lose that, you know, if you do a lot of pruning, you probably won't get those really, really early flowers. You have to wait for it to get a little bit more growth to it, and then you'll still get plenty of flowers. You know, for now, you know, you certainly, you know, if you really felt like you wanted to prune them, you certainly could prune them, and but then still get flowers for the rest of the season.
Oh. Well, that makes sense.
So that's good. So that's the good part about the newer ones.
Okay, the other question I have is I have, most of them are getting eastern sun. One gets western sun, and it doesn't like it. I'm going to move it in the fall because it's struggling. But it's blooming blue. But I have two, bought the same time, put either end of my porch. The one that gets more light is blooming like crazy, and mm-hmm. the one at the other end, it's been in 2 years, and it hasn't bloomed, but the plant gets really big. Is it because mm-hmm. it's not getting enough light? I can't imagine, you know.
Is it getting anything? I mean,
it's underneath a tree that gives it some shade, and it gets light. I mean, it's not in the dark, but
right.
all I can think to do is try to move it, and it's really big.
Right.
Move it to where it gets more light, because it's just not, the plant is beautiful.
Does it die back to the ground every year?
No. not really. It's with another thing that I wrap in landscape cloth and protect so it won't get nipped for early bloom.
Right, because that would be the only thing that I would be a little bit concerned about. Of course, if it's supposed to be endless summer or some of those, then that'd be different. But those older ones, they get really huge. But if they didn't have any wood from the year before, they never flower.
These are both endless summers. So I've got three endless summers in this yard. Two of them are blooming great, and this one isn't, although the plant is getting large just like the other ones.
Right. So there's something going on there. I would certainly try, fertilizing it, and I assume it's being watered and all that good stuff, so it keeps going. So, hydrangeas are kind of funny. I've noticed that they do kind of need to be moved around, and they'll find that perfect spot, and they'll do great. In other places, they're just not happy. The sun isn't quite right or something. So they're definitely one of those that, even though we have a little bit more variety now with these endless summers, they're still a little finicky on where they're placed.
Well, it's so big that I hoped you were going to say cut off some branches of the tree. Because it's so big, it's going to be difficult to move. Because it's really,
you could always
big.
Cut off some of the branches of the tree.
That's easier. That's only a
you
can
thin.
Well,
if you get a certified arborist out there and they can thin it for you, that's certainly properly thin the tree. That's certainly not going to probably hurt the tree any. But so I guess that's up to you. But I'm not sure what to tell you on that one.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right, let's try and get one more. Bloomington, Illinois, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Sandy, I wonder, do you know of any dating services for trees? Because I have a male and female persimmon.
Okay.
And I'm certain I have a female persimmon because it's just full of those multiple flowers.
Yeah.
And the other one, not as much. But I'm wondering, they're about 4 or 5 years old, maybe 5 years old, and when will they mate?
I think this is for another show. No,
for our late night show. Save this question.
Then we'll talk about persimmons. If you're getting flowers and you know that you have a male and a female, then it sounds like for one reason or another you're not getting pollinators.
Mm.
So, do you have bees and stuff around? Do you see any kind of bee activity or anything?
It's the female is so filled with bees.
Oh, well,
You know how those persimmons are. It's almost like a. Yeah, there's tons of pollinators.
Not an issue.
I have to say the one that I'm calling the male, I have never seen any flowers on it.
Oh, Well, they're not, they're not terribly big to begin with.
Right.
And certainly the males are even smaller than the females.
Really?
I would, and you're in Bloomington, I would have... Of course, it's probably too late now for this year to really look at the flowers. I think what I would do is really have somebody sex that persimmon for you.
You think
make sure they have a male. Pardon?
You think the other one? I know I have one female. You think the other one might be a female too?
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
But it doesn't flower.
Well, and it, which is the other reason why, and if it is a male and it's not flowering, then that would be the other reason why you're not getting persimmons either.
Right.
And it might be, how old are these?
The one that I'm calling the male is bigger, and it's planted a year ahead.
So it's what, would you
and
say
it's
three
like
or four?
Five, it's like 6 years old, and the other one's 5 years old.
Boy, I think by now you start to see some flowers, because there is an age thing where sometimes they just don't flower till later on in their lives.
Right.
So I would, when it flowers next, I'd get some pictures or something, take it into the extension office, have them take some pictures and let somebody find out for sure that that's a male or a female. Or it may be just a timing thing where that one is just a little precocious and needs a little bit more time. And you know how guys are. Sometimes they grow up
a little
slower.
Thank you very much. We have to stop now. We've used our time. I appreciate the calls. Thanks, everybody. Sandy will be back next month. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.